peace comes out of trust. And you have to show that you trust everybody. For 2.5 years, I did not touch money. And people fed me, people paid my tickets when I had to cross the sea. It was a real experience that love begets love. This idea that humanity is kind of divided into religions or nationalities or races or capitalism or communism or socialism, all these are just labels. Ultimately, we are all humans.
My guest today is Satish Kumar, a living legend of peace, ecology, and nonviolence. We've recorded this conversation in Paris at Résidence Taillard, where Satish was in residence, and it felt like sitting with someone who has spent his whole life proving that peace is powerful. At 18, Satish walked 8,000 miles from India to the nuclear capitals of the world, Moscow, Paris, London, and Washington, carrying no money, trusting strangers entirely across countries, religions, and political systems. Satish's teacher was Vinoba Bhave, Gandhi's spiritual successor, who led the Bhutan movement, persuading landowners across India to voluntarily give millions of acres of land to the landless. From Vinoba, Satish learned that wars come from fear, but peace comes from trust. In this conversation, we talk about Gandhi, Vinoba, the limits of military power, the courage to take the first step, and Satish's new book, Peace is Possible. We also talk about ecology, education, imagination, and why inner transformation and outer transformation are like two legs. We need both to walk. Here's my conversation with Satish Kumar.
Such an honor to be here with you. Thank you so much.
And thank you. My pleasure.
Here we are in Paris at the Résidence Taillard. Very special. At what's a very important time, I think, in history with what's going on in the world. And I've been living with your books the past few months and just letting that seep in. So I'll just mention a few of the highlights. One, I really wanted to meet with you because this podcast is called Peace is Power. And I think that you are the living embodiment of that, really, that peace is a more powerful form than violence.
Yes, absolutely.
And some of the things that in your extraordinary lifetime that you left 9 years old home to become a Jain monk.
Yeah.
You walked 8,000 miles for peace through countries that are considered very dangerous to the nuclear capitals of the world. You've written 10 major books with another one coming out soon, I hear. I can't wait to hear about that.
Peace is possible.
That's perfect. That is the message we need. And you've started a school for ecology and a magazine. So I wonder, Satish, do you have a story that comes to mind right off the bat about the power of peace, that peace is a power?
Yes. Peace is power and power of peace. So for me, in India, Mahatma Gandhi was the great example of power of peace because he kind of single-handedly organized kind of movement for integrity and relationship in South Africa and was very successful.
Even before India?
Before India. And then he came to India. And he traveled around India by train to understand India, to meet people and connect with people. Very humble and very thoughtful and very peaceful. And he said the power of love, power of peace, power of nonviolence is greater, particularly if you are physically weak. And you can't fight with kind of Britain with arms. I mean, Indians have no army or no weapons. And even if they did, they will not match British arms. And also, if you have arms, only a few soldiers and young people who can be trained to use weapons And modern weapons are very complicated. And so only few people can join. But the power of peace can be practiced by women, men, young, old, anybody, farmers, gardeners, cooks, and workers, rich, poor, everybody can practice the power of peace. And so he said that if we want to create a big movement for independence of India, then we need to use the power of peace and power of love and power of nonviolence. And that way, he was able to kind of inspire millions of Indians who joined him and made salt to protest against the salt tax. And then many other events happened in India, and eventually India became independent. And Britain remained friend. And the first governor of India was a British Lord Mountbatten. So that was a kind of power of peace. And we said that you stay for one more year and hand over this system and the rules and the regulations and the governmental sort of systems in a gentle and a nice way. So very peaceful. And now India and Britain are best of friends. And that we did not get any killings and no death and no destruction and no... So power of peace has shown. And then power of peace with Martin Luther King. That was, I had a great privilege of meeting Martin Luther King during my visit in America or after my war around the world for peace. And he was an embodiment of peace, an embodiment of love. And he was a very radical man. And he was sent to jail for 29 times. And yet he remained completely forgiving, kind, peaceful, nonviolent, and loving. And he made big changes in the country. And now in the United States, the black and people have much more a friendly relationship and better relationship than before Martin Luther King. And only through his work that somebody called Obama could become president and a black man could be in the White House. So these two great examples show that power of peace and power of love is greater than the power of any weapons. And if you take American kind of power of military, they were in Vietnam at war, and what happened? Nothing. After 50,000 American soldiers were killed, and how many Vietnamese were killed, and how much destruction was there, and still communists are in power in Vietnam. In Afghanistan, the United States was there for 20 years, and even after that 20 years of all that power, all that money, all those weapons, Taliban still ruling. And I don't
think... Shows you the limits. Of
yeah, violence, exactly.
Limits of force.
And so I don't think the weapons and the military power is any use. The real power is power of peace and power of love and power of nonviolence, power of kindness, power of generosity. All those values are the only real power.
Can we go a little bit more into this? Because right now in the U.S., there's a sense, you know, the left and right divide. There's a sense that one side has been more forgiving, more respectful, more trying to, you know, to make peace, and that the other side has no interest in doing so. And so there's a growing movement on the left to say, we need to be bolder. We need to be stronger. We're basically surrendering, unconditionally surrendering to the other side. And so, you know, that peace doesn't work if only one side wants to make peace, and it takes both sides. So how do you, you know, what would you say to that? Like, what would you suggest to progressives in the U.S. right now about how to move forward?
I mean, I agree with the idea that in order to make peace, both sides have to agree. But I would say that the more powerful people, like the United States of America, or Israel, or Russia, these powerful countries can take the first step and take the initiative and say that although we have lots of weapons, a lot of military, a lot of tanks and bombs and all that, but we don't want to kill people and destroy kind of buildings and kill mothers and babies and children and schools and hospitals. What is the point of doing that? Let's talk. And let's find a compromise and let's find a middle way. So I think the powerful have to take the first step, in my view. But also the weak have to understand, like Hamas or Iran all these countries also have to understand that there's no point in fighting and killing and destroying our country. Let us talk to powerful people and find a middle way. There'll never be a perfect world. There'll never be completely non-violent and a loving world. But you have to find a middle way and compromise. So I agree with you that both sides have to work on peace, and then only you can create a wonderful world, future world. But I would still say that the most powerful, militarily more powerful, that like Russia, United States of America, and Israel, these are three very powerful countries, and they need to sit down with the weaker party and find a better way.
And it's interesting because on your walk to the nuclear capitals, when you were saying, you know, everyone should be giving up nuclear weapons and will you commit? And each one of them said to you, oh, we're ready for peace. We're ready to commit as soon as they take the first step. So in a way, it's like true leadership is that willingness to take the first step.
Yeah.
And make overtures and show through your actions that you do trust the others.
So this is why when I was in Moscow and I was in Washington, and both places I was received in the Kremlin and in the White House, and I said to them that to some extent, kind of there are two ways to walk. One is a unilateral expression of trust, unilateral expression of love, that whatever the condition, I will not use weapons. I want to find a peaceful solution. So everybody has to take unilateral kind of step. And not say, unless you do it, I'm not going to do it. That way is not going to happen. And so both sides, I would say, had to take unilateral decision. So that is the Humalika had to say that we will not use violence and let's talk and talk and talk until we get to compromise. And at the same time, Iran and Hamas and Zelensky, all these people also have to say, we are not going to fight like Mahatma Gandhi, like Martin Luther King. We will not surrender, will not accept injustice. We are prepared to be killed. We are prepared to die, but we are not prepared to kill you. If you had that position, the whole world will support Ukraine and the whole world will support Iran and Hamas because they are completely nonviolent. And so I would say that both sides have to show unilateral position and accept peaceful way.
And you know, Satish, that's what you showed by going on that 8,000 mile walk. It's amazing that you were mentored by Vinoba Bhave. I loved his book, Moved by Love, and that he was responsible for the largest voluntary land transfer in history, millions of acres to the landless. And before your pilgrimage, you went to him. And what did he tell you about your shield and your weapon, what to take with you on your trip?
Yes. I said to my teacher, Vinoba Bhave, that I want to walk like you are walking in India. I want to walk to Moscow, Paris, London, Washington for nuclear disarmament and peace in general. And he said that wars come out of fear. Peace comes out of trust. And you have to show in your walk that you trust everybody. And so how do you show that? You show it because you have no money. You go without any money in your pocket. And you trust people that they will feed you and they will house you and they will look after you. And if you can have that trust in your heart and no fear, then you are a true peace builder. And it was a very big idea. And in the beginning, I was a bit worried and reluctant to accept this idea. How am I going to survive, and actually, sometimes I need a cup of tea, or sometimes I need to write a postcard
or
to somebody.
Shoes. Huh? Or new shoes.
Yes, exactly, my shoes. But then I thought about it, and I thought that Vinoba has so much experience. He had walked 10 years in India. He had walked 100,000 miles without any money. And he had persuaded millions of landlords to give land for the poor. And he collected 4 million acres of land and distributed to the poor. If he can do that, and it's his idea, so I decided, look, agree and accept. And I went, And I was amazed that for 2.5 years, I did not touch money. And people fed me, people gave me passage, people paid my tickets when I had to cross the sea, like from France to England, and from England to America, and from America to Japan, and from Japan to India. I take boats and aeroplanes, and people paid for that. So when I was in Muslim country, I said, you are Muslims, I love you, and I trust you. And when I went to Christian countries, I said, you are Christians, I love you, and I trust you. Then I went to communist countries. I said, you are communist, Soviet Union at that time. I said, you are communist, I love you, and I trust you. And then I went to capitalist countries, and I said, you are capitalist in Europe and America. I trust you, and I love you. And if I trust you and I love you, you can't have other people not trusting you and not loving you. So for me, it was a real experience that love begets love. Trust begets trust. So I trusted the world, and for 2.5 years, and even now, I don't worry about money. I trust everybody. Wherever I am, I have no fear. I have no fear of anybody. Because this idea that humanity is kind of divided into religions or nationalities or races or capitalism or communism or socialism, all these are just labels. Ultimately, we are all humans. The cosmos is our country. The planet is our home. Nature is our nationality. Love is our religion. And we are rooted in our community. So this way, if you have a trust in your heart and peace in your heart and love in your heart, then you can combine the community with cosmos, the intimate with the ultimate. And you can live in peace without fear, without doubt. And even if sometimes your difficulties come, life is difficult. Not easy. So ups and downs are part of life. But it's much better to live peacefully and lovingly. And that is not just an idea. That's my experience. I have walked from India to America and to Japan and different countries, different nations, different religions, different political systems, different economic system, and yet everybody human, everybody loving. And whether I was meeting the Shah of Iran in a peacock palace or the Kremlin or the White House, or I was sleeping on a floor in a poor farmer's house, and I was happy in both places equally. And so the happiness and joy and peace is in your heart. And nobody else can give you peace. Nobody else can give you joy and happiness. Happiness and peace and joy are in your heart, and you have to be the kind of in charge of your own peace in your heart. And nobody else can give you peace.
Hey, listeners, if you're wanting to go deeper in your peace-building journey, come visit us at euphrates.org. Euphrates Institute is the organization I founded after my time serving in Iraq during the war. We offer courses, resources, and a global community of peace builders from more than 60 countries who are learning how to practice peace within and without. You can learn more at euphrates.org.
How do we start down that path? Because Satish, you've done such amazing things. I was telling my daughter this morning, I would feel vulnerable even walking around Paris for a day with no money. Like, how will I buy food? How will I get here? You know, it's a feeling of vulnerability to have nothing and to be so dependent, you know, on the universe to provide on others. And so how do we start to exercise that muscle? I'm guessing it got easier for you over time, but where do we begin?
First step is to trust yourself and love yourself and know that you have everything. When you were born, a little vulnerable baby, universe put the milk in the breast of your mother. You have been given brain, mind, thinking power. You have been given imagination. You have been given heart, feelings. You have heart. And that's a cœur in French. And the word courage comes from cœur. So you have been given heart and courage. And that courage has to be cultivated like a seed. And so if you believe in yourself, if you trust in yourself, I had two hands. I can grow food. I can build a house. I can paint a picture. I can write a poem. I can write a book. I can cook food. I can do anything I want with two hands. These two hands don't ask for money. They ask for work. And so I have two legs. I walk around the world. I don't need aeroplane. I don't need train. I don't need car. I don't need a bus. I don't need a bicycle. I have two legs. I could walk 8,000 miles. Vinoba Bhave could walk 100,000 miles. Buddha could walk around India. Pilgrims go from South India to North India. So this idea that I'm vulnerable and how will I live without money is completely fear, unnecessary fear. People have lived without money for centuries, and the money is a new invention. And so I don't think we need to worry about money. And money is also good. I'm not against money. You can use money, but the most important thing is your imagination, your creativity, your courage, your heart, your love, and those qualities that are much, much bigger and much more potentially more powerful than any amount of money you had. You can be millionaire and still unhappy. You can be millionaire and still fearful. So money does not give you trust or love or peace. Money is only a means to an end. The end is love and peace and kindness.
Mm. Thank you for that.
And how do you start? You start every day thinking about it, meditating on courage and love. Like, how do you learn to play piano? Every day.
Yeah, you start with lesson one and you progress.
Yes, exactly. Every
day. You start where you are.
Play half an hour. And in the beginning, for 1 month or 1 year, you are not playing that well. But in the second year or third year, you get better and better and better. So as you can learn to play piano, you can learn to trust yourself. You can learn to love yourself. You can learn to be confident and courageous. If every day you focus on it, meditate on it, that I am going to trust, I'm going to love, I'm going to think only beautiful thoughts, beautiful words, beautiful action. I'm not going to say anything bad to anybody. I'm not going to insult anyone. So if I'm not going to do anything bad, nobody else is going to do anything bad to me. Have that confidence. And you can learn to love. You can learn to be confident. You can learn, like you can learn to play piano. You can learn to dance. And you can learn to write. In the same way, you can learn to love and respect other people and be peaceful. This is why many, many people become monks. They learn every day. Zen monks meditate every day. So we don't have to become monks. We can be at home and learn and meditate at home.
But also what you're saying is a conscious choice to cultivate that, to be inspired by examples of that. I mean, I'm sitting here with you and I feel so inspired. Then the second I open up Instagram and I see a latest thing to be outraged by, it's like we're also eating a diet of rage and selfishness and greed and violence. So it's, in a way, what I'm hearing you saying is we have to consciously choose to nourish ourselves with love and kindness.
Yeah. I don't use Instagram. I don't read newspapers because they focus only on the negative. But there's a much bigger positive part in the world. There are 8 billion people. 7.5 billion people are not at war. There are 10 million people in Paris. Maybe 9.9 million people are not pickpockets or killers or stealers.
Yeah.
Maybe few people may pickpocket or hurt you or something. And you focus on that and don't focus on the large numbers of people who are friendly, trusty, loving, kind. I mean, even the shop in front of my house here, the shop was so lovely, so kind, so helpful, so smiling, and so wonderful. So people are very good. So I don't look at newspaper. I don't look at Instagram. I don't look at the social media. I look at directly with people and see how people are. And I've experienced the world around the world and Muslims and Christians and Hindus and Buddhists and communists and capitalists and rich and poor. Everybody's human and they have been kind to me. So if you are kind to other people, they'll be kind to you. Yeah. Have that trust and don't worry.
Yeah, in your direct experience.
Direct experience.
Not just what you're seeing on the screen.
Yeah. The news is only focusing on the bad in the world and not focusing on the good. And there's a much greater amount of good in the world than the bad in the world.
That does lead to another question I have, because sometimes, Satish, it's really frustrating, especially as someone, you know, who started an organization on peace building. And we pour our hearts into nurturing peace within ourselves and our communities. And this is a community of grassroots peace builders, 60 different countries. And we are just pouring all of our heart into nurturing that river of peace. And then it goes slamming up into a dam when a leader decides to start another war, or, you know, which takes its toll on the environment, displaces millions of people. And then our folks in different parts of the world are directly impacted by that. So part of me feels like, yes, some of our energy needs to go to nurturing that free-flowing river, but also does some amount of our time and energy need to be going towards dismantling the dam? You know, whether that's the poor leadership or the military-industrial complex, that here we are spending a billion a day on war, and there's so little to fund peace-building efforts. So, like, as much as we're doing on the building the new, does some amount of energy needs to be going towards dismantling the old model?
Yes, I agree with that. And in order to dismantle the old, we need to organize people.
Yeah.
And like Mahatma Gandhi, like Martin Luther King, like Mother
Teresa. And you've been talking about doing that since the 60s, that we need to get together. We need to, you know, that peace building organizations need to collaborate. Yeah. And like, what is standing
so
in the way?
So we need to do three things. First of all, we have to be peace. Be the change that you want to see in the world. Because Mahatma
Gandhi, individuals.
Yeah, individuals.
Yes.
You cannot be a peacemaker if you are not at peace within yourself. So you have to be the radiator of peace. You have to be the light of peace. You have to be the change that you want to see in the
world. And everyone can be that light of peace, right? This isn't just for select few.
No, everybody. It's not just select few. Everybody has to practice peace in their own heart and live a simple, elegant, beautiful life, and not pay the taxes to government for military. Because we all pay.
I know, but we'll go to jail, Satish, if we don't pay.
Yeah.
I don't want any of my money going towards funding these wars, but I have to deal with the consequences that I could go to jail if I don't pay.
Exactly, yeah. Mahatma Gandhi was in jail 12 years. Nelson Mandela was in jail for 27 years.
Okay, fine.
And Martin Luther King went to jail 29 times. So going to jail, So Mahatma Gandhi used to say that I go to jail like a bride goes to wedding chamber. So he was gone.
And if we all did that, what would they do? If millions of us refused to pay our taxes and went to jail, true.
So the second thing we have to do is to learn to communicate. Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Mother Teresa, they were all good communicators. And they built a good movement by spreading the word and convincing people that independence of India is good, end of racism is good, end of apartheid good. All these things, people have to believe that these things are necessary and we have to do it. So at the moment, our communication is not strong enough. People don't see the truth and they don't see the good things that can be done, should be done, and possible. Peace is possible.
That's true.
This is why I gave the title of my new book, Peace is Possible.
Yeah.
And the third thing is, we have to also work with other people. All the great movements have been cooperative, collaborative. No one person can change the world. We have to come together and build communities, ashrams, centers where people come together, live together, and work together, and go out in the world. And so we need lots of volunteers and lots of organization. So it's a kind of building a peace movement is not easy. So if you say there are millions of Buddhists, how did Buddhism start? Buddha himself spent 12 years in search of enlightenment. And when he was enlightened, he saw what is the truth and what is love. And then he spent the rest of his life spreading the word, organizing sangha, organizing community, preaching from village to village, town to town. And so now we have millions of Buddhists around the world. But in the beginning, Buddha was one person. And he started like that. So in the same way, Jesus Christ, he was crucified, and yet today we have millions of Christians. So the same way, if you want to make a world of love and peace and nonviolence and kindness and compassion and courage, all these qualities, then you have to organize like Buddha organized and Jesus Christ and his followers at least organized and many others have organized. So be the change, learn to communicate effectively. How the capitalist system communicate. Coca-Cola everywhere, McDonald's everywhere, but peace and love and kindness are not everywhere. Why not? We should have kindness and compassion spreading around the world. We should have a strong communication. And then we have to organize things. We think ourselves, but we don't work with other people. Say, oh, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you. We focus on disagreement rather than agreement. So be the change, communicate the change, organize the change. And the fourth thing is, don't expect the results immediately. We are looking for outcome and results immediately.
Yeah. And we say, oh, it didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. Things take time. It took long years before racism came to an end and Obama became president. It took long time. I mean, Gandhi started India's independence movement in 1913, 14, 15, and India became independent in 1947. So nearly 30 years. And so I would say that it takes time to build a movement. So don't expect results immediately. So be the change, communicate the change, organize the change, but don't expect the outcome result immediately. Results will happen whenever they will happen. When the world is ready and the circumstances are all together and ready, change will come. I will act and act and act as long as I live, and that's all I can do.
Yeah, I loved in your books when you talked about that the action is the point, that in karma yoga, you know, it's not expecting a result or an outcome.
Exactly.
The purity of the intention and the purity of the action. Yes.
Yoga of action, which is action itself has intrinsic value. I'm talking to you now. This has intrinsic value. I don't know what the result of this talking will be. Who will listen to it, who will agree with it or not agree with it, or they will like it or not like it. That's not my problem. My problem is only to do what you can to best of your ability and communicate your ideas to best of your ability and leave the results in the hands of the universe.
I guess that leads to another thing that really struck me when I was reading your reflections is that we so yearn for an alignment, right, between the inner motives that we have, the purity of heart we're bringing and the intention and the action. And yet what seems to be the outward environment, which, you know, I live in the U.S. and the culture of violence is so endemic, is so widespread. And it's hard to live in alignment spiritually, you know, living this life of peace when I'm part of, I'm implicated in, and I'm surrounded by a culture of violence. And somewhere you talked about that it's hard to live a spiritually fulfilling life in an unjust society.
Just because it's hard, we should not be discouraged. Climbing Mount Everest is hard. But people with courage and commitment do it. Making India independent was hard. But Gandhi went for it.
And people said it was impossible. Huh? He didn't say it was impossible.
No, it
was.
Yeah. Bringing an end to racism was hard.
Here it is. If we live in an unjust society, practicing spirituality in our personal lives is not easy. That's exactly what you're saying. Yes. It's not easy, but it doesn't mean
that you don't do it. I mean, walking around the world for 2.5 years, climbing mountains in Afghanistan, going through long distances of desert in Iran, going through the snow-covered villages of Russia, going without any money, sometimes hungry, sometimes no bed, sometimes sleeping out under the stars. And I did it because it was much more interesting, much more joyful, much more kind of inspiring than if I had flown from New Delhi to Moscow. That was easy, but not very interesting. But walking from New Delhi to Moscow was much more interesting, much more challenging, and I can tell the stories. I can write books about it. If I was flying from New Delhi to Moscow, there's no story. There's nothing to write about it. But if you can walk to Moscow, it's a story to write about it. And you know, I met a woman who gave me four packets of tea.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If I had flown from Delhi to Moscow, I would not meet this woman who would give me four packets of tea and say that please give one packet to our premier in Moscow, one packet to the president of France, one packet to the prime minister of England, one packet to the president of the United States of America, and tell them that if you ever get a mad thought of pressing the nuclear button, please stop and have a fresh cup of tea and don't use the nuclear weapons. For that one message was worth my walking from India to Moscow. So hardship should not dissuade you from good action. Buddha's life was not easy. Jesus Christ's life was not easy. Mother Teresa was thrown out of her convent and she was alone, young woman alone, and she created a big movement and in the end she got the Nobel Prize. So in the end you succeed, but you should not be dissuaded from something because it is hard. Hard is better than taking easy way.
You know, I think about that woman who gave you the four packets of tea because it's such a beautiful story. And it just also shows the power that one person can make because she didn't have an outcome plan. She was moved. You guys were having tea. She was inspired to go get these packets of tea and give you this very powerful message.
Yeah.
And since then, think about her message that you have delivered to countless people. Not only the leaders in those countries, but in all your books, and we're sharing it with people more like her little ripple effect. You know, she could have never known how many people would be inspired by her one little action.
Yes, yes, exactly.
It just goes, you just have no way.
Exactly, exactly. This is why you can't predict your outcome. You have to do your best.
You do your best.
And I was surprised that this ordinary looking woman in a confectionery worker in Georgia, and she had this inspiring idea. She said, I want to give you peace tea.
Yeah.
But she said that tea has been a source of peace and people share tea. And in China, they have tea meditation. In Japan, there's tea ceremony. And she's working for tea factory and she had a love for tea. She said to me that these packets of tea are not packets of tea only, they are packets of peace.
Yeah. Wow. And she didn't know how much that tea would be brewed. And
Exactly. So that's a kind of imaginative. Yeah. Imagination is a very important part. She just imagined immediately that she should give packets of peace tea be delivered to the four leaders of the world.
I think something we really need, speaking of imagination, is the environment. And I so love that you combine, some peace folks say, we're working on peace. They're working on the environment when absolutely they're interconnected and intertwined. And that's been such at the heart of
your
message.
But this is why we said at the beginning, shanti, shanti, shanti. Peace, start with yourself. Then peace with all the people around the world. Whether you are communist, capitalist, black, white, rich, poor, whoever you are, we make peace with you. And then make peace with nature, the universe. At the moment, we are at war with nature. We put millions of animals in factory farms. They never see the light of the day. They are kept all life in a very confined situation. Pigs, chickens, cows, they are kept in like a prison. So that rich people can have a cheap meat in a supermarket. That's no peace. So making peace with nature, making peace with the universe, making peace with our environment is as important as making peace in society and peace with your heart. So why we in India have this mantra of peace, 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 shanti, shanti, shanti. Three times, Om shanti, shanti, shanti. So the peace is not just the absence of war. Peace is a harmonious relationship within yourself, harmonious relationship with all people around the world, and harmonious relationship with nature. Because nature is not just out there, the mountain, the forest, the river, the animals, the birds. We are nature.
Absolutely.
We are made of earth, air, fire, water. So if we are nature, then how can we have respect of nature? That's not a dead object. Nature is a living being. And therefore, if we respect nature, have peace with nature, then we have peace with ourselves and peace in society.
And in a way, I feel like, you know, we're fighting all these little wars between each other when the big battle, the big challenge that we're facing is our environment and the climate and the earth that is changing. And I have to tell you, Satish, of all the issues that really tug at my heartstrings, when I think about the destruction to the environment and animals and our war with nature, It's so debilitating in a way. I feel so helpless and so powerless. And I'm so worried about my kids and the world that they're going to grow up in and their grandkids, if there will be anything left. Like, how do you keep the hope with something so huge? Like, little, like the wars we're fighting seem manageable compared to this overarching thing, which we don't even talk about, which is the environment. Like, how do we keep a sense of hope alive?
The most important thing to bring the environmental or ecological peace and peace with nature is to change our view of nature. At the moment, we look at nature only as a resource for the economy. We don't value nature. So we put sewage in the rivers. We put plastic pollution in the ocean. We put carbon emission in the environment. We do as if nature sink, nature dead object. It's not living being. So we have to change our understanding and our worldview and say that nature is not simply a resource for the economy. Nature is life itself. And nature there and nature here are not separate. We are nature, and nature is a living being. And so that's a deep ecological perspective. Deep ecology is that nature has intrinsic value. The value of nature is not how it is useful to humans, but nature has its own value. Trees are good as they are. Birds and animals are good as they are, like humans are good as they are. So understanding that deep ecological perspective and seeing Gaia as a living organism and not a dead object. And we have to start that in schools. Every school should have a garden. Yes. Every school should have a study of environment and study of ecology. And if our children grow understanding that nature is not simply a resource for the economy, but nature life itself, and we are nature, and what we do to nature, we do to ourselves, that understanding has to be in every school, every university, every college. Young people, they have to learn it. At the moment, our young people are just trained to get a job, so they exploit nature, exploit other people, become rich, have a big house, big car, and have a big pension and die. That's a kind of very kind of bad education. This is why I started Schumacher College. I wanted to have education of head, education of heart, education of hands. All our young people should learn to cook. They should learn to garden. They should learn to love. They should go out and learn from nature. Nature, our teacher. That kind of respect for nature has to start early. By the time you are 40, 50, 60 years old and you are conditioned to think about nature as a resource for the economy, it's too late. So I think education had to start from age 5 and 10 and 15. And at that time, if you can educate our children, then at the moment our children are brainwashed. They are conditioned to think that nature is only to be exploited. And humans are above nature. Humans are superior to nature. And nature only there below us. And
ultimately, that way of thinking hurts. It's heartbreaking when we take notice of what we are doing to our earth, exactly. To our home.
Yeah.
It really hurts.
Yeah.
So then I would hope that would prompt us to change.
Yeah. Our home. Nature is our home. Planet our home. That's the ecosystem. Eco in Greek means whole. So ecology is the knowledge of whole. And true meaning of economy is the management of the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. At the moment, what we call economy is not economy. It's a money domain. Yeah. It's a management of money. And that's not economy. We use good word and put bad meaning to it.
Right. I just have two more questions. And one, given all that's going on right now in the world and with the environment, and what is a personal peace practice that you would recommend? Any peace practice, whether it's outward or inner, but where would you recommend
peace start? Peace is a big, big idea. Peace is related to inner transformation, and peace is also related to outer transformation. It's like you're walking on two legs. You can't walk on one leg. You have to walk on two legs. So you cannot do outer transformation without inner transformation, and you cannot do inner transformation without outer transformation. So inner peace and outer peace are like two legs walking together, two hands walking together, two eyes looking together. So unless we are prepared to live peacefully, we are not going to make peace in the world. And unless we make peace in the world, we are not going to be able to live peacefully within ourselves. So they are totally interconnected, totally interdependent. We have to work on both fronts at the same time, simultaneously. This is why I left my monkhood. Because monkhood was just in that transformation. You have to be peace within yourself and let the world do what it wants to do. World is a bad place, a kind of sinful place, and you have to escape the world. And that was wrong. And Mahatma Gandhi said to me in my dream that you have to live in the world and you have to practice spirituality in the world. And so inner peace and outer peace, inner transformation and outer transformation must go hand in hand together.
Was that before you met Vinoba, that dream that you...
No, that dream was before I went to see Vinoba. Gandhi had already passed away. Yeah. He died.
But in your dream, he came to you and then you met Vinoba.
Yeah.
What was Vinoba like in person?
Vinoba was a very saintly, very simple. He wore just a loincloth and a little unstitched shawl and nothing more. But he was very scholarly. He knew 6 languages. He spoke French, he spoke English, he spoke Arabic, he spoke Sanskrit. So many languages. And he was a great scholar of Arabic. So he translated Quran into English and Hindi. And he was the great scholar of Gita. And he gave 18 talks on the Gita on each chapter as a book called Talks on the Gita, very beautiful book. And he was a great spiritual being, but at the same time, very social and very kind of ecological, very environmental. Creating land gift movement was one of his best gifts to the world. This is why I said the inner transformation and outer transformation go together. And Vinoba Bhave was the great example of those two going hand in hand together. He was a very peaceful, very calm, very kind, very spiritual, very simple person in himself. And yet he was engaged in a social movement. But tens of thousands of people are working with him. And he collected 4 million acres of land. And he criticized no landlord. He said he complained never. He condemned nobody. And he just allowed their compassion, their kindness, their generosity, their love. And he persuaded them rather than condemning them. At the moment, we always say, you are bad, politicians are bad, capitalists are bad, 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 bad. That's not going to solve the problem. He said, whoever you are what you are. Be kind, be compassionate, give land to the poor, share your wealth. Persuade them rather than condemn them. And that would have been Vinoba Bhave. He never condemned anybody. He met landlords, he met prime ministers, he met presidents, he met everybody, and he loved everybody. Whoever you are, if you are a bad person, he will love you even more. He would say that the bad people need my love more than the good people, but they are already good. I don't need to do anything with them, but I have to love the bad people so that I can transform them. So through love, you can transform. Through hatred, you can kill, or you cannot transform. So Vinoba was a man of transformation.
Thank you for continuing his legacy, and thank you for all that you have done and are yourself.
Thank you so much for the time. Thank you.
And here's your peace practice for today. Satish told us that wars come from fear and peace comes from trust. So today, practice one small act of trust. Maybe it's walking instead of rushing. Maybe it's smiling at a stranger or asking someone for help or offering help. Or simply pausing and remembering that we have a heart, we have hands, we have our imagination, and we have courage. Then let's take one small action from that place without needing to know the result. That can be our practice today, to act with love, release the outcome, and remember that peace is possible one step at a time. Thank you so much for listening, and join me next time on Peace is Power.
If this show speaks to you, please follow it. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Every follow, review, and share helps more people discover the show and helps spread the power of peace a little further.